Thanks for coming. My name is Dylan Diaz. I'm a managing consultant at Neil Analytics, and we're here today to share a fun case study with one of our key customers. This is a Coca-Cola bottler, Arca Continental out of Mexico. And so I'm going to soon turn it over to them. I'll just give you a few slides to introduce the company, and then we'll get going here. So Neil Analytics is a Seattle-based predictive and advanced analytics company. That's our focus. We've been an early partner for the Azure Machine Learning product, which is now known as the Cortana Analytics Suite. It's a fascinating product that allows you to do a lot with data that's harvested on the Microsoft platform, brought into Azure, and then run through a variety of endpoints. Neil has been working focused specifically on manufacturing, retail, and energy, and we have deep expertise in these spaces to bring solutions to market. Today, we'll talk about one specifically in retail. Briefly, just in terms of our service offering, we look at data and the set of information that an organization needs to be successful as kind of a continuum. There's a fabric of information and services that's needed to make it all come together. Some of the things out here, I won't go into this block by block, but you'll recognize some of these as being data engineering and pieces that are required to harvest and enrich information. And others are more forward-looking, where you use visualization and advanced analytical techniques to make use of this information in the enterprise. And we're thrilled about our relationship with Microsoft. Microsoft obviously provides the horizontal platform. There's a lot of infrastructure that is provided in a compelling format that allows us to scale up, scale down, use a vast amount of compute and storage. And the Neil Analytics has excelled over the past few years at taking all of these infrastructural bits and making use of it in these solution scenarios that I just described. With that, I'd like to introduce Arca Continental. We have here from Mexico, Lizeth and Pepe. Both of them are in a key group within the bottlers, and they'll go into this in a little more detail. But the revenue growth management group, which is responsible for this, putting product out into the distribution channel, and when we pick them off coolers and vending machines. And Pepe is going to lead us up here. He's a director in the RGM group.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. First of all, as Dylan said, we are from Mexico, so I apologize in advance for our Spanglish. feel free to ask any questions if you don't understand something. We can talk it in Spanish, or we can go back in English, okay? Just a little bit about the company. Arca Continental is a Coca-Cola bottler. We are the four largest in the world in the Coca-Cola system. We have operations in Mexico, Ecuador, the north of Argentina, and recently Peru. We also have a snack brand in Mexico, which is Bocados, and another brand of snacks in the east coast of the US is Wise chips, and we have a bakery in Ecuador as well. So we are diversifying into different businesses as well, in addition to the Coca-Cola, which is our main business. The big data project began with a process with Neil, where we had several workshops and one-on-one interviews, trying to decide. We focused mainly in this first stage of big data for us. We focus in marketing and sales projects. So these interviews and workshops were focused on trying to identify the key projects with potential for us to analyze. In the end, we had like 14 different projects, and we together with all the executives, we voted on terms of how easy was to implement one of each of the projects and the potential of impact of each of the projects. And we decided to select. In the beginning, there were four. One of those projects it was a key learning for us. Sometimes the information we have to rethink how we are building it. So one of the projects is on a standby because we will need to further work more in the data that we have. So we decided to develop three models. The first one is the why model, and actually was the name of our project. The why model is why we have the sales we have. Why are we selling? And the second model is really very closely related to this first one, is understanding the change between two different sets of time, what happened on those whys, why the deltas. And last one is, this one is really important, trying to figure out what are our best set of SKUs that we should have in every customer. And we will see it a little bit of everything in the future. We use information from the outside, government information mainly. External information was from the government, and the other one was weather, temperature, and raining. We had a lot of different set of variables on those ones. And as a result, we wanted to have a dashboard. We have it in Excel now, in order to understand what is going on with the Y model, a waterfall month by month, where we have the deltas of those Y models, and again an Excel data that we have in order to select the SKUs we were going to decide to optimize or to improve in presence in the market. Okay. For the Y model, as I said, we had 167 variables in the beginning. We got lots of information from external, from internal. In the end, we ended up with 110 different variables in our model, because we get rid of the ones that were not explaining anything, so or that were repetitive. For instance, in weather, we have high temperature, low temperature, average temperature, and there are a lot of information that we got rid of some of them because they were not really explaining. For us, most of our sales are at the highest temperature of the day, at midday. So for us, it was more important to have the high temperature rather than having an average temperature of the day, for example. And we put together these three different sets of data. The external data was government, weather, and our internal data in the same learning machine. And we ran all this model. Well, actually, Neil helped us running these models. And so that's how we came up with the Y model. When we were analyzing the first, actually, this one should be first, but when we were looking at the first results, the way the information was in there and the colors came up as if we were thinking about the DNA print of the sales market. It was kind of lucky that we got the information in that way. But when we thought about it, it looked very much to a DNA of our market, of our sales DNA. And when we look at it, every single market we will see later has a different print of DNA. And this was the first key learning for us. For instance, this is a zone where the price gaps are very have a very high part of the significance of all the variables. Sorry, and if we see it in terms of the different zones, we will see that this is zone one, as I was saying. Like 45%, it is explained by the price gaps, but not all the zones have the same results. If you see zone five, for example, we figure out that this zone, it has a very low impact in price gaps against our competitors. So it was by intuition we knew that, because we know that this zone, which is on Hermosillo and. If someone knows a little bit of Mexico, it's on the west north part of Mexico. Our market share is really high, and we don't have a lot of pressure of competitors. And so we have somehow knew that, but this was confirming what we knew. We arranged the set of the 110 variables that I told you that we have. For instance, price gap has 57 variables included there. You know, there are we have price gaps against Pepsi-Cola, against every single competitor, and in flavors and colas and different price gaps. These are the strategic variables. Those are the ones that we somehow control. We can change that, but we don't change it every month. We don't change prices every single month. What we do control on the day-to-day basis are what are the operations, operative variables. So we had a set of variables that we change every, we can change every single month with everyday operations. And then we have the external ones. And what the other key finding that we find from this is that most of the result of the sales depends on us. And that was a very good insight, because we used to think that weather for Coca-Cola, for water, for drinking purposes, the hotter the day, the most you need drinks. So we thought it, we had a lot of impact on that. But when we learned this, we learned that a lot of the things that we do have a lot of impact in the business. By running this, another key good thing that we find from this is that we had a very good significance on all the models. We ran models for all the different territories that we have in Mexico and the different zones that we have in Mexico. Here are the territories, and territories, some of they have name, but basically one of each of the territories is a different city that we have in Mexico. And basically most of our findings had a significance of 80 or more, which is really good. It came to be very, very good. And just by looking at this, it changed our way we are gonna be setting our strategy. For instance, someone, we know that price gaps are very important for us. So if we increase prices, we should be expecting our competitors to follow us. So we had to keep a very good track on those price changes of our competitors, because if they don't follow, then we will have a very high impact in our sales and in our market share. So this one is very important for us. Another key learning for someone, for example, is RTM is everything road to market. It's everything related with all the variables that we have in road to market, like effective visit of our customers. So for this zone, this is really important, and that depends on us. And we should focus on keeping track on having a good execution in our market. And for instance, zone five, what I was saying, external variables are really important. So if the economy, the economy of the region is not good, it's mainly rural kind of industry where you have livestock and that kind of business. Well, if the economy is not good, we have a lot of impact in sales as well. So the strategy should be different depending on what is going on in every market. And then from that model came the wider deltas. And this is really nice. We have all the data put we exploit the data in Excel. And it gets information from different parts. But what these models does for us is to build what happened between two different set of timing. We can compare two different weeks, two different months, or even a complete year. And it's embedded in there all the formulas that we built with the first model. And for this, right now we're using it just to explain what happened last month. But what we're planning to do in the near future is to try to predict what is going to happen with the variables that we can predict. We can somehow figure out how it's going to be the weather next month, because we knew that probably last year was very cold. So probably last year was cold. This year is going to be back to normal. So we should be expecting an increase in temperature. We can predict what are we going to do with these variables that we do every day to day on a day to day basis, and then this one basically remains the same. We don't change the prices every month. If we were to change the price next month, then we can predict this as well. But usually they stay the same. We can predict this, and we can predict this. With this, in the near future, what we will try to do is to forecast our sales in a better way, in order to anticipate anything that we have to do with logistics and all the process that we run in order to get a Coca-Cola in every consumer. As I said, and that was very good for us to learn that most of the variables that we control are the ones that affect volume in a very good way. So what we are doing is focusing all that data that we are learning from the deltas to focus on the variables that we know that need to change during the next month in order to achieve our goals. And those are the first two models. The next model is the right SKU. Lisette is going to take us there.
Can I just jump in?
Sure.
So just to summarize, so what you see out here is, you know, obviously this is a business user, our key interface within the organization. There's another part of the organization that we worked with IT. And, you know, this is a lot of the underlying Azure architecture that was fired up. For the analytically inclined, this is, you know, linear regression, which is, you know, we did a combination of univariate and multivariate, if that makes sense. But that's in the background. The business users care, but don't necessarily have to. We fired this all up in Azure Machine Learning. What's not on here, but it's hidden away. There's gobs of Azure Machine Learning or Cortana Analytics Suite experiments that are running in the back that have been productionalized. The reason you saw those good model fits is because there's an asset that Arca Continental have and that many of you have. Many of you are running ERP systems. ERP systems traditionally have been used for transactional reporting and, you know, kind of fiduciary responsibility management. Great. You know, my chief data scientist says people are sitting on this wealth of information because when you have an ERP system, it's kind of a census of the data because, you know, you have to manage orders and fulfillment, et cetera. And how about now if you take this wealth of data that's in your ERP system, and as Pepe mentioned here, you know, you have weather data service, data from the weather service, you have economy, you know, all of this information, bring it on a single pane of glass, and then you can do these regressions back and forth that create the insights that popped out here. So there's information you have, there's the infrastructure from the Azure and the Cortana Analytics Suite, and then, you know, there's the techniques that can be brought to bear to make all of this pop. And, you know, and then end users, business users, can have a very simple, familiar Excel interface. You know, the next phase of this project is going to light up a lot of this on Power BI. A lot of you have seen Power BI today. So this is V1, so we decided to keep it in Excel. And this, the possibilities are endless. Arca Continental now has a great, you know, call it a data lake, if you may, but an amalgamation of data in one place that they're able to do a lot of this fun stuff. And this is just the beginning. So just to summarize, thank you.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, sorry.
And quick question. Is this about eliminating SKUs outright in your product catalog or determining which SKUs to put into a given store or location?
This first part is about eliminating SKUs,
so
yes.
Simplifying your catalog.
Yeah,
great.
Because we have too many. And this is normal because the market is dynamic and we have changing and different preferences between the market. So we have to get rid of some of them, and this kind of information help to find what can we do with these SKUs. So
that's a great question. I'll come back to it.
So we make a little focus on this kind of SKUs, which are negative.
Just to add a little bit on that one, those that are negative, and just to think, and how does it make sense to put a new SKU? How can you have negative sales in the total? It's because in the end, every single SKU is competing in the same space that we have in every customer. So if you release a new SKU, sometimes you have to put it on the shelf and something else is going to be out there. And sometimes you make the wrong decisions, putting some new products in the market that will reduce your sales in the end. So that's why it makes sense, okay?
Yeah. So we have a limited cooler capacity, so we try to focus on that. And we have this example. For example, this is the same product, but we sell it in 6 bottles, in 12 bottles, and 24. So we have too many combination of the same product. And for this territory, only the 24 bottles, that works. That give us the more profit than the others.
On the right hand is the coefficient that came up from the linear regression. So what it's saying, the first two SKUs are negative impact, have a negative impact on sales, and the other one has a positive. So what it's telling us, and it makes sense. I mean, why do you want too many SKUs? And get rid of the ones that are selling with just a few bottles. It's better to sell the 24 bottle package, okay?
Yes.
In terms of water.
And the second example is from Coca-Cola between flavors. This gives us a right fact that the larger package from Coca-Cola have a better performance than the flavors, because we know that Coca-Cola has a higher brand equity than the others. So maybe for flavors, we have to do a smaller package.
Margin for the retailers, or the margin by which you were selling them, was much better. You know, I mean, they kept the same price, but you lowered your price dramatically. That would shift the balance of the SKU.
Yeah.
Whether the SKUs were valuable or their negative contribution or positive contribution.
Yeah. The first stage, and probably you will talk about a little bit later, but this is our first steps in big data. That's to be honest. And first and second, we are pushing to go to a further step. We in the process, we knew that there were some things missing. This one are, when you cross the first chart where 23 SKUs account for 95% of our sales, we don't need to run any big data in order to know that we have to get rid of some SKUs. We added to this model, we added the margin for each of our products in order to translate the volume shift to profit shift as well. And with that, we make those decisions. There may be some issues. Those are the things that we were learning in the process, and we know we will go for further modeling and have more variables to include in the different sets of models.
Yeah, but I wanted to take that, right? So what you're indicating is kind of the multivariate concept, right? So so I come back to what I initially described. We do have, you know, fairly, I think we hit the slide, but there's, do we have the variable slide in here?
Yes.
Is it in the back somewhere?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you want to show?
Yeah, that would be interesting just to kind of, maybe not in this one.
The table without the SKUs?
I don't want to derail you.
Oh, that's fine. But simply put, it's multivariate regression. So by concept of what that is, and if you have enough of a sample size, it basically holds one thing in each regression run and then isolates the effect of the other one. So you're right, that happens. But if you have enough of a sample size, you can isolate that effect.
Yeah, I guess I was just more interested in how you, when you say, OK, I'm going to eliminate these SKUs, part of that consideration then would also be, what's my pricing strategy and how would that affect it? Because you could do it a couple different ways. Like if you change the pricing strategy and you held some of those other variables, you've altered them, then it may actually shift which SKUs would actually, you know, predictively would sell better versus what you're doing on the shelf today.
Yeah.
Okay, that's one question.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I just like to add something. We did this information per territory, And our first approximation, our first results, was across all Arca Continental, was in an aggregate level. So when we tried to do this information and put it in this, developing this black box, it was per territory, considering that pricing strategies, that which are different between territories. But at the end, we put all the bad SKUs in an aggregate level. So maybe we consider that. And this graph is the other side. We saw the bad SKUs, but we have in here good SKUs with a really good performance. For example, in here, which is a big pack for a Diet Coke, we saw that it's not delivering in every territory that we have in Arca Continental. So we saw that we have a huge opportunity in this kind of SKUs. We can launch more products like this and maybe have good results. We're making a pilot from these products. So why does this make sense for us? We are getting rid of 426 SKUs that we showed you. And also we're making some pilots between colas and flavors, and also to bring more big packs. That was our first conclusion in all of this.
Now, just to put a little bit more on the BPAC, this is a SKU that we don't have everywhere. So for us, it was a good finding to see that there is a very good lift. And sometimes you have constraints in production, and you don't stop to think about, hey, what happened if I invest a little bit somewhere else and start producing this SKU in somewhere else and maybe we can have better sales. So again, these are models. We are running some pilots to test those models. We are in that process, and we will see how it goes. But for us, this was a good finding because we usually have that SKU for supermarkets, for what we call the modern trade. And we decided to run a pilot test in the traditional, what we call the traditional, the mom and pops stores, and we will see how it goes. We are running the pilot right now. We will see results probably by the end of December, and we will share with Dylan how we did it.
Yeah. Excellent. So what we've seen be successful at Arca and be successful in other companies is this sort of workshop methodology where we hold initial conversations with some examples from the industry of different analytical practices that we've seen be successful at driving kind of a return on a big data analysis. And then we facilitate a conversation with the key stakeholders within an organization like we facilitated with Arca in order to conduct a scenario collection and collation exercise where we can arrive at which scenarios within your business make the most sense. And then we can resolve these scenarios based on the ROI and the ease of feasibility prioritization that Arca walked through earlier. So this is an example of kind of what the output of a prioritization matrix would look like. You've got feasibility and ease of implementation, and that's what makes it easiest to knock out and choose scenarios initially. And this is an illustrative example. I've removed the numbers from the SKU scenario, but this is an illustrative scenario that we have of what one of those scenarios looks like. So what was your question?
So one thing that I'm not seeing in here is the decision whether or not even to undertake the project.
Mm-hmm.
You're assuming that you're going to do this project, but how do you decide whether to do the big data? Because like you said, a lot of that stuff, you're in the market, you know that this product doesn't sell here. Or, I have three products, and this one sells 1,000, I sell three of these. Get rid of that one. You know that just by business,
mm-hmm.
by just general financials. So how do you decide when to do big data?
I can take that initially and give you the provider view. I interface with a variety of customer types. Mm-hmm. And they're all over the spectrum from Arca. The situation in Arca Continental was pretty unique. Actually, I take that back. It wasn't unique. It was It's increasingly becoming common where there's someone in the executive, you know, part of the house has gone to some conference, has seen some initiative, and has said, hey, what's this big data, advanced analytics, machine learning, you know, pick your buzzword, they come in many flavors. Yeah. And then they would say, you know,
which we're filtering those concerns or those things because they went to a conference and all of a sudden that's an initiative now.
Correct, right?
Let's not do that.
Yeah, so then the question comes down, you know, from on top above. Another way it gets started is, you know, it's more of a grassroots effort, right? There's a few line of business stakeholders that have seen something, played, you know, gone and hacked at open source R or whatever, and they're saying, well, this is cool. So, you know, I think it comes from a variety of places, and it's the effective, you know, mashing up of a true business need that can add business value, and then the tool sets and capabilities and the budget, right, which is important, that can bring it together and make this effective. I know in Arca Continental's case, they knew that there was an opportunity. They're an innovative company by design. I don't know if you know this, but probably they'll describe it better. But within the Coca-Cola system, there's a competition between bottlers on who can demonstrate that they're the most innovative. And, you know, and their CIO has taken pride over winning that competition, you know, over the many years. And therefore, there was a leap forward to do this. You know, we first started talking with them a year and a half ago when, you know, the market was waking up, but not the rush that I'm seeing right now. Right now, I have, like, you know, 10x the volume of, you know, inquiries. But these guys stood up, you know, 2 years ago when it was pretty new. So
I don't know if you were in one of the here in the same room earlier today, there was a very good meeting here, and they, I don't remember the name of the woman, but she was saying that most of the company uses only 14% or 12%. It was 12% of the data that you have, all the data you have in the formation. We know as a company, we have a lot of data. There is, we believe that we are now in a country that there's a lot of external data as well, very good data. We had expenditure per city. We have taxes gain in each city. We have a lot of things that we can use in our advantage. And then we know we are going to go for other modeling as well, but there are a lot of things we can explain. Who is the best seller? What is the profile of your best seller, salesperson in the market, you know? What is the characteristics that makes him the best? You know, if we have all our pre-sellers in the market and we can check different information data that we have, we already have that. We have psychometric exams and IQ exams, and we have peer feedback and so on. We have a lot of information, but we don't use it. We just have it, and we don't know. Imagine that you can start using that information or to really direct your strategy better. I'm not sure if we're going to have a good model with that, but if we can explain that, it will be very nice. That's just one example, where to place the best place for placing a vending machine. The amount of people that is working in a place, if they have a lunch break there, or if they go out, there are too many variables that you can take, and we have. So we knew that somehow we have all this data, but we haven't in the past used it in our favor. And I think that was the main reason why we are exploring, and we are going to be even going forward. We are putting a special team doing this. We're going to start working with our local universities as well in order to help running new models, keep working with consultants. And we feel that we have that information. And when I heard that 12%, I think it was true for us.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it should be true for most of us. And when you think just about the example of what happened if this SKU, we should be selling this SKU somewhere else, and we don't know. And that's a very good question. And those were real findings for us, and we are implementing that. So in the end, a good decision comes with a good result. If this happens to be a good result for us, and I think it will, we will seek in the future to run new models, you know.
Yeah. And just to take a liberty, there was a question asked here about kind of ordering. I'm going to join a few things up to create an example. I mean, you all saw the connected cow, right? There was a question here about, you know, predictive ordering versus, and so all of these are, and then there's a concept of, you know, the salesperson. It was referenced as sales coverage on our slides. So the question could be, you know, do we need to have more in-field sellers versus telesellers spending, you know, three times, or going out three times a week and spending 15 minutes per store to then be able to drive the most profitable SKUs? And so it soon becomes very compound, and, you know, bringing all this together, and this is a $5.5 billion organization, right? So you're looking at these small optimizations that is worth a fair bit of change. And so it's about, you know, now the salesperson has a device, you know, we're able to, you know, kind of track time between visits, time spent at location. You mash that data up with what was sold. You get the point, right? You suddenly start getting that connected cow effect where, hey, you know, I just found another $10 million, right?
Yeah.
And that's what they're going after. We're not sure we'll get it. We expect to. You know, but you've got to take the first step, and this is the first steps in order to go chase a dream out there.
So to answer your question at the implementation level, you draw a line on this. And everything below the line, you say, this isn't worth implementing because you haven't met our threshold. And that's the ROI calculation that you make. And it's pretty straightforward to implement. So what other questions do we have? I know there were a couple in the back. Anyone else? Yeah.
I had a question about this morning. Steve Levitt mentioned the issue of sometimes management doesn't want to know the answer once you get the data there. And I wondered if you encountered that at your company or maybe there's something about the inherent way you approach this that you avoided that or overcame it.
Yeah. Usually what the guys that don't want to hear the answer are the sales guy. because you're going to put more pressure on them on the different variables, depending on what you find. But I think it's always better to know, you know, and it will prepare you better to understand how you can build your strategy in terms of whatever, pricing, people you hire, production. For us, it was the first step of many, I hope. And I think it will be better to know the truth and with that truth, try to move forward in a better way. These are predicting, and in the end, these are predicting tools that you will have. It may not be exactly in the right spot, in the right number, but it will show you the way you have to move. That's how I see this. So it's better to learn and to know that and to see you have to get, for instance, that zone number one, we know it's Monterey for everyone. The city of Monterey is very competitive. And we knew that, but we were not keeping track of the price gaps against our competitors with that, you know, pressure. Now we know we have to do it, and by learning that, I think we will do a better job in the future.
Go ahead.
Earlier, one of the audience members asked about price optimization, or at least how do you separate out the influence of promotions versus price versus placement versus brand. So where am I taking this? I am in the price optimization space, and you guys, this is fascinating work. We tend to get laser focused on price optimization as the most important thing because that's the products we have. But we do, and we generally sell to B2B companies, not B2C companies. But occasionally we'll sell to distributors who have a bit more of a B2C mindset. Mm-hmm. So this is my question. I've seen some B2C companies and category managers who think that mix is everything. Promotion and mix is everything. Price a little less important. Where do you guys fall on the spectrum right now? You can't optimize all at once. Where do you fit? Are you all about promotions and SKU optimization? It seems like you are. Where are you on your journey towards price?
Are you asking Neil or Arca Continental?
It's a confusing question.
But I get your question.
It's a very hard
If you're asking Arca Continental, it's pricing. We do have other tools in order to optimize pricing. We have a CoinJoin analysis, and we have a specific tool that is called Profit Seeker's internal tool for Coca-Cola system. Yep. It involves a lot of different variables, not just the CoinJoin. And we use that tool heavily in order to decide our price in terms of how it's going to move the market share and volume somehow. And we add in this tool in order to understand other set of variables. But we are our major goal as a revenue growth management team is to optimize the price with the promotion. And then we are adding this tool in order to, or these new tools in order to understand the behavior behind every single zone in order to make those decisions. There is no specific tool to run this. You know, you have to get different tools and use them in your advantage. You know.
So we're almost at time here. If you guys have to get going, I encourage you to go. If you want to stick around and keep asking questions, that's great.
Hey, so I just one other just quick question on the SKUs that you eliminate. When you eliminate, because so SKU in my perspective is a composite key in and of itself, right? It represents a packaging, it represents a price, it represents a, you know, maybe a number per unit, maybe it represents a color, maybe it represents a promotion. And when you took a look at the SKUs that were recommended to be eliminated, the 96% or whatever of your SKUs that didn't contribute to the top of the majority of dollars, did you find any insights in that? You'd say, oh, hey, well, maybe it's really packaging or maybe it's really the bundling. Like, people in Territory X don't like 12 bottles per package. They prefer 24 or whatever that may be that would cause you to break and do the analysis on a different basis or a more granular basis than SKU.
We did not do that right now. So it was more of a lift measure. Now, I do think that, you know, preferences... consumers are voting with their, you know, their purchasing decision, and so that's folded in there. But I think it's a great idea, right? I mean, you then now look at this and see if there's common trends and themes that can be unpacked from that.
Now we crossed that project. We were running a parallel project of optimization, and we crossed that with a spoilage, margins. There are a set of other variables, but those weren't on the linear regression model that we ran here. But we somehow crossed the information that got from this model with the information that we had that we were taking some decisions, and somehow they match together in the end. So. What we found is that we found new SKUs to promote in some other regions that we were not having. So, again, this is our first step. We are piloting the results. We are not taking the decisions everywhere. We need to run those pilot tests to see if the results agree with the regression we had, the model we had, and if they fit, then we will go forward to other territories as well.
Yeah, just to conclude, and one more, the culture is, you know, you kind of alluded to this, and I think Steve said the same. It's more about just the hard science. You know, oftentimes you'll kind of develop, you know, there's hard stuff in the back, but you know, if no one uses it, you know, so what, right? The thing at Arca, which is different, is their COO, you know, kind of, and he had challenged me right up front when we were in the process of closing the deal. He's like, you might do your analytics, but you know. I don't know if there's going to be a sufficient culture of change for everyone to kind of pick this up. So it is you know kind of the statistical, the economists in the room, along with some of the you know the change agents, the executive change agents, COOs, etc. That you know, and then he applied pressure to his channel as well. I think it's the effective coming together of both that make for success. And I, you know, I'd be misspeaking if I said, you know, you make a gee whiz mathematical model and, you know, spin it around and people are going to drop and say, oh my gosh, right? That doesn't happen. And so it's that nice yin yang if you get going, I think that actually drives a lot of the success.
Yeah. So thank you guys so much for your
thank
questions.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And
thank you.
Thank you.